Let's talk to Jerry Sullivan. And here we go. I guess sports columnist, it was the right way to introduce you.
That's what I was, yeah. I was actually senior sports columnist at the end. But journalist, writer, sports writer, whatever.
When was the last day at the Buffalo News?
Sometime around May 18th of 2018. So do the math, like 18 months ago, 19, not like I'm counting, but.
Yeah, you did about 30 years there?
It was actually 29 at that point. I came in April of 1989.
And just for a refresher before you got here, you were at Newsday?
Yeah. Newsday for roughly 3 years.
Yeah.
Before that, briefly the Syracuse paper, and before that, the Binghamton papers.
Okay. All right.
That's so I knew a lot of taxes paid in New York State in my life.
We appreciate the support, Jerry, that's for sure. So, there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but at the heart of this is the idea of the changing landscape of sports journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to the people who have been impacted by the most, people at the Buffalo News, there's a lot of you that are no longer there, very famous names for us. You know, we talked to Bud Bailey. Bucky Gleason's a person, go on and on and on. We can go with all the names, John Vogel, Tim Graham.
Yep.
There's lots of them. And so for you guys personally, it changed, and professionally it changed. What about that? Talk about just what things were like for you 10 years ago compared to what you see now being consumed by the sports consumer.
It's interesting you just go back 10 years because I felt around 10 years ago, things started to change with Twitter for me. Now, the internet was around, but I attach it to when Lisa Wilson said I had to get on Twitter, I would guess 2011. And then that seemed to me the exploding social media landscape of sports. Everything became different. The pressure, the people out there breaking stories. How fast you had to get stuff out there. And, of course, with a website, how you could write more. So about 10 years ago, I started producing easily 50% more copy than when I was in, you could consider, my prime in my 40s.
Right.
So all that was happening, and I adjusted to it. I had friends in the business, and the New York Times that said, you sports writers had it early, easy for years. Now you got to start working hard. And it was still a fun labor of love. Writing long wasn't necessarily harder. Sometimes writing a longer story is easy because you weren't constantly, you know, cutting it and polishing and trying to get it down to size. So anyway, yeah, that was going on. But the competition out there and the way things were changing during that time, you know, they were trying to compete online and losing circulation. So we felt the pressure that things were changing. And we had meetings where we were told that we were in a very competitive marketplace, and you could see that things were getting tough. And meanwhile, around us, other newspapers are dying, people losing jobs, papers are cutting back, and Buffalo was always a little ahead. Buffalo made a lot of newspaper profit. Around the time I came to Buffalo, they were making $1 million profit a week. So we were a little in better shape than most, but you could see things changing.
Right. As you were talking about that, and Bud Bailey kind of got into a little bit what you were talking about here when I was with him yesterday. If you, this kind of came on to you late in your, would have been your career, I suppose. I don't want to suppose or that you were going to retire at a certain time. Maybe you'd be doing this forever. But at the same time, if you knew, if this was the landscape when you were looking for a career way back when, would it be as attractive to you, do you think?
That's a tough question because I didn't know what I was getting into when I got into journalism. I was very naive and senior in high school, went on the school paper because my buddy, who's the top columnist in Connecticut, Jeff Jacobs, told me about it. We grew up together, and he's been sports writer here in Connecticut 10 times. So he was much more savvy than I was. Neither of my parents had gone to college. So I'm like, yeah, I'll do this. I grew up listening to Red Sox games. I go, yeah, I'll do that. I didn't even know what I was going to do when I went to college. So I didn't have this vision of being a newspaper writer. I was always kind of humble before it. Like, I was happy to have a job. I didn't really care how much money I made. It was just a thrill to me to be exposed to newspapers and do it and get a job. I was happy, you know, typing bowling scores in Binghamton when I was 23 years old. So people would criticize me for not having the ambition. There were people, as in any business, were really ambitious about jumping from one job to the next. That wasn't me. So what I'm saying is if I came along, I would probably say, all right, I'll go work for a website and make, you know, $15 an hour to go cover games. There are guys out there doing that now. I'd like to think that would be me because I wouldn't see it as economically not advantageous to go down that path. I still wouldn't want to be a doctor or a lawyer or wear a suit and tie.
Right.
My second choice would have been to teach, you know.
Right.
A lot of the things that I aspired to came after college. Like, I mean, to be more well-read and to branch out. Listen to my life story.
Yeah, no, that's part of what we have here for.
I didn't start reading books until after college. And so I was very narrow in that I love sports. I didn't branch out until later. And then I became a news writer in Binghamton. And I wanted to be a news columnist, but went back to sports because I love the NBA, blah, 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 and end up here. But that's the long answer to your question. That I think that I would probably still pursue it because I wouldn't be swayed by the fact that there wasn't a lot of money in it, because there wasn't a lot of money in it back then. There are jobs. There are people out there doing it. There aren't as many as there used to be, but I think there's hope.
But let me ask you then this, to kind of jump forward now. As you said, there's more competition, people breaking stories out on Twitter and Facebook and all this information that flows through. Is something lost for the sports, I'm going to keep using the term consumer, for the sports consumer that the credibility of a newspaper had again, 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Are they losing something? Have they lost something? Has the relationship between the sports consumer and the teams they consume, have they lost something from losing that kind of position that the newspaper used to have?
Well, I think so, but it's complicated. I don't know. You know, I'm going to come across like the old guy now, and things were so great in the old days, but I think some younger people don't get the traditional role of newspapers, and they think that they're looking for a newspaper to cheerlead for their team, you know, and it's like they don't understand the role of the critical newspaper man and columnist. And I know that's true because columnists are disappearing to some extent. The Athletic doesn't have columnists. They have feature writers, and they cover the sports, and there's a notion that that's what people want. So that's still what newspapers used to do. So I'm talking about one aspect of it now.
Certainly.
But I guess it's become much more of – the media for sports has become much more driven by fans. I think the Athletic is largely a fan site. I think teams have their own sites now. They have their own people in there on a regular basis that they pay to write for their teams. They have their own website. So where do newspapers fit in now? Well, I don't know if newspapers are going to even survive anymore. So who's going to serve that role? And is that role even really valued anymore?
And is it important? Is that role important? That's really the question, because, I mean, like I thought you outlined it really well there. Teams have their own journalists, they call them, or lead journalists or whatever they are. TV covers in their own way now, which is different than it once was, I think. Radio is almost non-existent. But without that kind of edge, it seems to me that something's lacking. But I guess what I'm saying is, from a cultural, societal standpoint, is it an important role, especially when it comes to sports?
I think that the newspaper sports section that serves all people had value, but I don't think that people see it that way. I guess I'm talking about sports fanship is fandom is more narrow nowadays, and I think some of that has to do with the media and how they just feed people. like in this town, Bills Sabres. It's like people identify narrowly now with sports. And again, this is where maybe you seem like some old timer, but I think a more traditional sports fan has a more broad appreciation of sports. They appreciate their high school sports. They follow, you know, more of an international appreciation of sports. Go look at the media in Canada and see how different it is and how much they cover soccer. They cover track and field. They cover women's sports more. And this, I think a lot of it has to do with media, televised media, what's happened, that young people have grown up with a more narrow focus of sports that they're told that are important to them. I think with the NFL, gambling and fantasy teams, it's almost like more about the individual and their own. I mean, everyone's always, you know, identify with teams as a fan. We've all been fans of teams. But I do think it's narrowed, and I think that's eliminated for a mainly younger population the desire for that newspaper organ to give them information about everything. They want their one thing. We know the culture has become much more individual, focused, specialized. You want cooking, you go to a cooking site. You want music, you go to a music site. So, yeah, will there continue to be newspapers that have everything?
When you think about that, does that worry you?
It worries me more. So sports is sports. It worries me more in the real realm, the news world, that the way news is being consumed. I don't think we're going to have as educated populace because they don't consume news the way they used to, because it's everything's entertainment. You know, the idea that you would follow the school board or your local politics, or because you're a citizen. Remember the old idea of the newspaper as the paper record? It didn't exist for profit. I mean, they were always profitable. But there was a time where newspapers didn't require much profit at all because they weren't parts of these conglomerates and looking at, you know, their shareholders. That it really was, it's a quaint idea. The newspaper is executing the freedom of the press, and everyone read it every day like my father did, and they knew what was going on, and we were better for it. And now, I mean, I just asked my daughter in Vegas if she's voting. She's not registered. She's college educated, but she doesn't vote. And she doesn't read a newspaper either. I mean, I don't want to criticize my own daughter, but I think she represents a sizable portion of younger people, that they don't participate as much as people did in the old days. That they're, I don't know, Jay, I don't have the answers here.
But I think you're actually giving a lot of answers.
But there's so much there. You know, if you're into cooking, you can spend almost all your leisure time on cooking websites, and then maybe, you know, watch some Netflix and never engage. Now, and if you watch your TV news shows, you'll get your right wing show and your left wing show. Is that a good thing? Again, but it's all specialized. It's like everything's geared toward the end. You know, there's someone out there is selling to you at all times. So,
selling to you?
Yeah, it's something. Someone will argue that they've been doing it since we were kids, too. We were watching shows, and they were selling sugar frosted flakes to us during
right.
Popeye.
Right.
But, yeah, I think capitalism has perfected it, continues to perfect how to sell, you know, specific things to people. And I don't know. Someone could probably express what I'm trying to say better than me. I might just be saying that we're getting stupider as a culture. But where do newspapers fit in? They don't. They really don't. To me, the success of the Times, New York Times, and the Washington Post is because they've become national niche reading for smarter people who really are engaged and subscribe. The local paper in America is dying, I think.
Mm.
The Daily, that tries to be all things to all people, that has its food section, its sports section, its crosswords, its new local news. I mean, God, you guys do it better than anybody, but how much is really invested in covering local news anymore? Because it's not profitable. It takes resources to go cover I mean, how many meetings go on out there that no one covers?
Right, right.
Well, I'm kind of on a tangent here.
That's all right, though. This is what
I am hopeful because there are smart people out there, and there is sports journalism, there is The Athletic, and we really hope for The Athletic to succeed because they're doing a lot of traditional. They don't have columnists. Fine. They're appealing to fans. It's a subscription-based model without ads, and that's a tough way to go. But they're making it largely, I think, because of investment dollars pumped into it. But it's a great site. You remember the National Sports Daily from the early 90s?
Very well.
Where we really, I mean, they wanted me to go there, but I just moved here. But, boy, that was a great model. They just couldn't make that thing work.
But right.
That was,
but we're talking about reading sports journalism. It was exquisite.
But, I mean, imagine the bad timing there. Just
right.
Before the internet comes in, they're trying to deliver a national newspaper hard copy in trucks. That was doomed to fail. What did it last, a year and a half?
Yep.
The Athletic is the internet version of that, and it's making it, and we'll see. People don't like to pay, though. Again, I talk about young people, but that's
right.
That's what they say. Young people are conditioned to have it free.
Right, right. That brings about a whole different set of questions. We'll pass on that for now.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and you somewhat answered it already, but I'll just ask it for the sake of asking it. What's the future of sports journalism then? What do you see? I mean, you're looking down the road here, like you said. The Athletic has caught the wave correctly, at least for now. But
I think it's still encouraging. It might not pay as well. I don't know what some of these people are making, but there's the Syracuse paper has the New York Upstate. They're doing a good job of covering the Bills. I guess if you can get in covering. If your specialty is one of the big ones, you'll do well. The people I know are specifically sports writers who cover the Bills and the Sabres at various websites, and it's doing well. Newspaper websites, maybe they will finally, maybe they're still evolving, and advertising will finally flow to the point where they can be profitable and, you know, afford to have unionized employees who pay, you know, good salaries for people like the old days of newspapers. So I'm hopeful, but it probably become more specialized. It already is.
Yeah.
It won't be attached to conventional newspapers, even websites. There'll be, you know, NFL sites, and people will go to their individual sports to consume the sport that they love. And as I said, I'm more concerned about other forms of journalism because sports thrive in this country.
Right.
There's so much. I mean, look, wouldn't it be great if journalism salaries trended the same way the player salaries had over the last 20 years? Everybody would be making five times more. I mean, look at all that money.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I imagine, again, I don't come from a position of scientific research, but so much is consumed visually now, so I guess TV will continue to do real well, and there'll be more TV journalism. I hope so. I hope there's more stuff like the good stuff that ESPN does. But ESPN has struggled financially.
Certainly.
To keep, because the competition that they have. So I guess there's people are always going to want to read, and they're always going to want to be informed. So in some form, they'll continue to be good, solid sports journalism. You can go out. You can find it now. There's a lot of really good stuff out there being written. I don't know what the numbers are in terms of jobs. I mean, you go back, 40 years in Buffalo? How many sports writing jobs were there? 100?
Right.
Between two newspapers? And now there's one paper with probably 8 writers?
Right.
So those 92 people aren't out there that would have been there 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have fallen by the wayside. I've met dozens of aspiring young sports writers during my time in Buffalo. And a lot of them just went on to do other things. Just radio, the guys that would go on GR and for minimum wage and do the weekends and do producing, and a lot of them just don't make it, you know?
Right.
They don't, there just aren't enough jobs.
Right.
Then they get pulled in some direction and get a job that pays. I mean, it's the newspaper that I grew to love, though, they're going to disappear. Maybe not in my lifetime, but they already have in some towns. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what's happened in a lot of cities. I don't pay close enough attention, but I know some of them have disappeared. A lot of two-paper towns, of course. I mean, I've closed a lot of those. But is Cleveland even published 7 days a week now? It's like you pick up the Buffalo News and there's no ads in it. So somebody out there is determining that this is not a vehicle, a profitable vehicle anymore.
As you were talking, you mentioned that, but what's Buffalo's connection to its paper? You know Buffalo. I mean, that's one thing I know about you. You've made your job over these 3 decades once you moved here, to get to know people and listen to people and hear what they have to say. What's Buffalo's connection to its newspaper?
I think it has always been, at least in my time, stronger than almost any other place. Financially, it was number one under Buffett for a period of time. From like the late 80s to the 2000, it was just printing money. It was ridiculous, and too bad they couldn't afford put more back into the product in the community. But and I think people loved their paper. What were the reasons for that in Buffalo? Are we more literate here? Why do people in Buffalo watch these other sports more than any other place in the country when their team isn't in? I don't know, think I have the answer to that. But in terms of the newspaper, there were reasons for the penetration for the news being higher than any place in the country. Some of it was geography. There's nothing to the west, Canada to the north. You have to go to nothing south, really. I mean, so they had no physical competition. They owned the market. I think it was an older market, Buffalo tending to trend older. And we know that older people tend to read newspapers more. And I thought they had good journalism. I thought there was a time when the Buffalo News had much more journalism talent than you would expect for a town its size, because people love Buffalo,
right?
And a lot of really good journalists that went to Buff State and never left. So I think it was good, and it still sells what, 80,000, which doesn't compared to the old days of 250, it's not much. And they just got sold, so it's going to continue to go down. But they've been better off than most towns, and I'm glad to have been here during those years to work in a town that really appreciated its newspaper. And I always felt read and appreciated, even by the people that wanted to kill me. I try to have faith in people. I'd love to have a country that valued education more, because my wife was a reading teacher before she became head of the teacher center in Buffalo, and we need to become more of a culture of readers. And then readers want to read good stuff, and sports fans who love reading want to read good stuff. So it's not it's not like I can't read the future,
right.
So I hope that I become I'm able to write again for Buffalo, and that they find it and they appreciate it.
we've spent a lot of time talking about the future. If you don't mind, a little bit about the past.
No, I'm better with the past. I know the past.
You know the past. Yeah. Hey, you always, I thought in your columns, you always made it known that you were a critical, I don't know if unbiased is quite the right word, but that when you went into a locker room and you wrote a story about somebody, you were taking you weren't there as a fan. I guess that's the way to describe it. But did you have, when you look back 3 decades as a sports columnist, did you have favorites that you liked to write about, that you liked to encounter, like to talk about?
Yeah, lots of them.
And you stick out.
Well, the things that I liked best were the Olympics were my favorite event in terms of they're global, they're political, they're bigger than sports, and they're majestic. And I got to write about women who tend to be better interviews and sports that didn't get a lot of attention, like covering Matt Anderson, great volleyball player from Buffalo, covering a great weightlifting event once in Atlanta, covering Tonya Harding even, and figure skating. That's, you know, things that brought you to places you would never otherwise see, and sports you wouldn't watch very often, and get to write about them. And it really lent itself, I thought, to some of my better writing. One of my favorites was the Super Bowl of Norwegian sports, was at the Olympics, the 4x10 kilometer relay and cross country skiing. That's their national sport, and people took off work that day, over 100,000 people, and they walked up this mountain very quietly and politely with their little picnic baskets and watched, as you could watch out in the woods, this cross country race. It was the coolest thing ever. So, but locally, I mean, I call basketball my favorite sport and baseball my favorite game. Basketball, and you've been there for some of these. I'm just as happy covering a Canisius basketball game or even a high school game as I am covering a football game. I mean, probably more. I still would always look up at the lights and, like, train my eyes on the lights. And then I'd look, and I would get this rush being at a gym, you know. And so any basketball game for me, to have been there when Canisius made the NCAA tournament in 96 for the first time in, what, 37 years or 39 years was a thrill. Tony Masiello's there, the guys up on the basket. I was there. I chronicled that. Or to be there when UB wins both tournaments in Cleveland for the first time, the women are there, you know. It was those events, they stick with you. Because, you know, I was looking at the Channel 4 TV website, just watching the news, and it had local highlighted in red. And it's like, yeah. Larry Felser, the great late Larry Felser, always said, all sports is local, kid. And they, what do they used to say? All politics is local. Yeah, well, he said, all sports is local. And that really, the local is what I always loved. And, you know, I mean, the Bills and the Sabres and Super Bowls, those are great things. But anything that had a local edge to it, and I was the guy, you know, who specifically had that responsibility. Like, it was one thing to be there when Nord missed the kick and write the column. There were 20 people there from Buffalo. When Canisius went that day, there were two of us. At the Olympics, when Jen Scher won the gold medal, I was the only person from Buffalo there. I was there. I found my way through the streets of Rio 4 years ago to find her when she got sick and she wasn't able to compete at a high level, and talk to her while she can barely speak, and I'm like practically in tears knowing. So those are the things, you know.
Yeah.
Or just writing about a high school soccer player dying in Ellicottville 20 years ago and sitting with her teammates in that school where everybody goes to school in the same place because it's so small, and you're going into town, and there's a little sign on the side of the road on a, what do you call them, pole, because they're state championships. That were girls' high school soccer, and they just lost one of these girls, their captain. And then 2 months ago, I see somewhere that name, State Soccer Hall of Fame, the coach. And I go, I know that name. And I went and I looked it up, and it was the coach of that team in Ellicottville. She got into the State Hall of Fame. I go, I have a connection to that story. That really matters to me. And if people that think all I did was go and rip the Bills and then I'm a bad guy, fine. But those are the things, those connections are what really meant the most to me.
Yeah.
And why to go and write some more local stories still in this area is exciting for me.
You know, it's you kind of got back to it after starting off with the Olympics there with your answer. But, you know, some of the things that I remember that stand out for me, talk about small. I remember you doing a thing about the, I think it was the Hinsdale football team.
Oh, God, that's right there.
Yeah.
Thank you, because that's on the same plane with Ellicottville, because you go down that part of the state, and I sat in a diner with the coach and a guy who played, just some guy. He played defensive end at Hinsdale, and they talked about not having the team. And you know what else I remember about that? I stopped on the way back from interviewing John Regas in Cowdersport. It was on the same road, and I said, I'll hit this on the way back. So that, and even something like that, John Regas, some bad things happened there. But at one time, everyone loved John.
Right.
The guy who made his living in cable and bought the Sabres and, you know, went and talked, what was it, the town down there?
Cowdersport.
Wellsville.
Oh, right, where he started,
he had,
right?
He had a hot sold hot dogs. So yeah. I go to the hot dog place and talk to some people. Those are the things that I love. You know, I never got around to doing a story about Belfast and the place where John L. Sullivan trained for a big fight. There's a little museum.
Yeah.
And then Channel 2 did a piece on their little thing, and I go, he beat me to Belfast for the John L. Sullivan thing. But, you know, maybe John L., you know, one of the great boxers of all time. There's a connection down there. So, yeah, but the Hinsdale thing, that perfect example of that. You know, doing the thing, my favorite thing ever. Some people would say the golf series where I tried to play golf 20 years ago. And that was fun, and I still hear about it. But I did the greatest high school years ever, 12
of them.
You
beat me to that, man.
And that was the most fun, the connections, going to Albion, getting the old yearbooks. My favorite story for that is there was a father who played at Syracuse football, one of those long names like Wojciechowicz or something, and this kid was a star at Orchard Park. Just so happened to be they were on two of the 12 teams, the father's Lackawanna team and this kid's Orchard Park team. And one of the things in my own head was how everything's connected here. I'm running into people that know other people. And I go in the Buffalo News Library, and this older woman who runs the library, I go, I'm just wondering, you get a picture of these two guys. I think we could run them with the story. She goes, I think that's my nephew. So she knew them very well. So, geez, it's all connected. Yeah, so local. And Canisius, Niagara. The other day, God, I think it was the day my radio show ended. So, like, I'm kind of bummed about that. But I have arranged an interview with Greg Paulus at Niagara. He's the coach that took over when Beeline's kid had to leave. And I go interview him and talking about Coach K and doing the thing I love, which is interviewing people and talking about, you know, Christian Leitner, and his kid is there and talking about his family and growing up in Syracuse. And I walked out of there and I was as happy as I could be. I said, I love being at schools and writing about basketball and interviewing people, seeing him with this little kid. And then I'm walking out and I see they have old photographs in the lobby at Niagara of the championship teams. And I saw that year, 09. And I see Fisher and that kid Lewis, remember?
Tyrone Lewis.
Tyrone Lewis was the MVP of the tournament in 09 as a freshman. And I was there and I'm like, yeah, there's some memories there.
Right.
And I was happy. I just lost my radio show that morning. And I was flying high because I was around local sports and interviewing people, and I thought I was going to do a good column for the Niagara Gazette. I'm still doing one a week for them to keep my hand in. And that's the stuff I've always loved. You know, Harrington and I. Now it's interesting. Harrington's the hockey guy now. They hate him for writing columns that are critical, but he would tell you our best times. We're going to MAC games together, covering the MAC tournament. I mean, we thought we were in the big time. I would be the only columnist of any stature in Albany for those things, you know, and the place would be cold. You couldn't get a cup of coffee. And I was happy as could be covering the MAC tournament. I just loved being at a game, you know. And so, yeah, I would do it again because, I mean, that would probably surprise people because I have this perceived – you know, character. I just don't have that big an ego.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, you had to establish a certain standing for yourself. Going from the small to the bigger, the Sabres, the Bills. I mean, you had to establish yourself, though.
It had to be tough. you know, got to be not afraid to have Bruce Smith threaten you and stuff. But I just, but I was never naturally that type of guy. I was always a shy guy. I told myself, I said, it's about the job. You got to get it outside yourself, and you can't be afraid of pissing people off because you owe it to your readers. And that's kind of one of the hard things is to think that there's an element of readers that don't get that don't think I'm working for them.
You know, that is an interesting point that you just got into there, because, and I asked this of Bud Bailey, you know, what advice would you give advice to the consumer of sports media? Because I think you hit on something right there. The idea that, like you said, you weren't asking tough questions just to be difficult or to be noteworthy, but you felt like it's something you owed your readers.
Yeah. Because a columnist is different from a reporter, obviously. I mean, ultimately, if you're a fan, you want the reporter to do what you can't do. And Bucky and I would always talk about this. It's, you're going where they can't go. You're in the locker room. And sometimes you describe a scene in the locker room. You literally take them in there to remind them and you that this is, you're doing what they can't do. So I would just remember what the reporter is doing. He's working for you. He's trying to get information. He's trying to be objective and critical. And, you know, it's just like if, you know, your kid is screwing up in school, you know, you have an emotional attachment. You don't want to hear the truth sometimes, but trust the teacher's telling you he's not your enemy. He's telling your kid what he did wrong. And that, you know, you're not always going to agree. And I get that a lot, and I like that. Oh, yeah, I miss your story. I didn't always agree with you. And I go, well, I hope not. It's the next day, 20% of the time, I didn't agree with myself because an opinion is an evolving thing. You're like, oh, maybe see it a little different tomorrow. But I feel I'm the person that when you go to the bar sometime, you just repeat what you read in my column because it's something to talk about. And people don't go to, I say the bar. They don't go out to the coffee shop, the bar, the water cooler, and talk about how great things are. You think Sabre fans right now are going and say, hey, boy, how about, and they are saying, how about that Eichel? But they're like, Jesus, you know, when's Bottle going to make a deal? When are the Pagulas going to do something? I mean, fans are fanatics, you know. And sometimes, you know, since it's like religion, you'll feel a columnist is like violating somehow. I mean, you get mad, but the smart people, and those are the ones I care about. The other ones, I mean, and that's the other thing on Twitter. I mean, if you read Twitter, and I 2 years, I didn't even know what those notifications were. That was my revenge. Because you don't want to spend time. Because if go read any of these sites. I tell my wife, don't read those things about with the story about the mayor or the teachers. Because if everyone has a voice, 20% of them are going to be complete idiots. And they're going to say some hateful stuff. When I hear about death threats now, I go, a million people go on these websites and someone says, I'll kill you. That's a death threat. But it's like, it's not really, it's not something that the FBI needs to step in on. It's like people could, I'm surprised that worse things weren't said about me. Someone ever came up and said, hey, someone said, you know, you were a child abuser. That never happened. But that someone could say that. I mean, when they stopped screening any of that stuff, it was kind of a big deal at the news, remember?
Right.
But we can't afford to screen everything. And so people have a right to say what they want. I think it's still ongoing in the business now, I guess. It's like, well,
yeah, somebody,
Facebook, obviously.
Right.
Politically, with the stuff, the Russian, I guess it is an issue.
Right.
Like, what's the responsibility of Facebook in these places to screen this stuff and edit it and keep stuff off? It's like a real tough one.
Right.
Because it's still about business.
Right.
You know, if you're selling and those people are out there and they're customers, how can you tell them what to do? So I was told, don't talk about the NBA. People don't want to hear about that stuff. The NBA, really?
I love the NBA. I think we talked about that before. What's good about the NBA? Let's talk sports for just a couple
of
seconds.
The NBA? It's a sport of great – I've always thought it was the best sport, but even more so, the great individual expressive sports talent for people. And I think it appeals to the younger set now because they're more into individuals than teams. I know with my son, he roots for individuals, and he loves the NBA, and he loves certain players. And you don't get disappointed. In hockey, you go watch, and your star plays 20 minutes, and they might neutralize him, and then the game's over. And what has he really done? In the NBA, even on an off night, you know, Harden's going to shoot the ball 40 times, and, like, you're going to see a lot of amazing stuff. And it's, I think, because of the influx of international players, thank you, David Stern, the rules changes that made the game more diverse. It's going back to being the game it was, really. People act like they played defense in the 50s. Go look at the scores. They played no defense. Now they play defense, but the game is evolving, sometimes to its detriment, I think, to be more about shooting. And shooting is pleasing. It's like passing in football. You can see that there's trends in all these sports offensively that are similar, like the rise in home runs in baseball is almost directly has the same sort of incline as three-pointers in basketball. And in both cases, purists will say, is that the best thing? I think there's too many three-pointers. But the athletic ability of the players, you can watch one quarter, and you say you don't watch every minute of every game and feel, I've been entertained. You know, go watch Georgetown Seton Hall college game for 40 minutes, and sometimes it's like, God, these guys, they're not that good. Yeah, they're college players.
Right. Right.
You know, none of them be in the NBA. It's very, very competitive now. Some of these young guys. And the game has evolved. That's the thing about the NBA. It's dramatic what's happened over the last 20 years. Remember when the scoring went way down and they were beating each other up and it was in the 80s, a lot of these games, including playoffs. Now, find any game that both aren't scoring over 100. And they're still playing hard and playing defense, but... I mean, the three-pointer, you could talk about that for
right.
an hour. But I even the All-Star game, I looked at the box score from the first one I went to in 87. One three-pointer made by the winning team. One. Go look at the Lakers of the 80s, the great Magic Johnson teams. They would go the entire playoffs. One year, the entire playoffs, I think they had 8 three-pointers total. They didn't. They were a little slow to figure out the three-pointer and how important it was. And now it's at the point where, like, oh, my God, the Rockets, half their shots are from three. So the game has totally changed. It's like, I love it, but it's like, I can see how it's hard for some people. It's a different game.
Yep, no doubt about that.
But do we want to go back to 1990? I don't think so. The worst point scoring-wise. You could look it up, look at how the scoring is.
Yeah.
And that's good for the game. And they're smart. And the smart sports have gotten more offense into the game. It's entertainment.
Then the final question is about a sport that might not look so smart right now, and that's Major League Baseball and the Houston Astros scandal. To me, the game
a lot of the innocence did go out of it. I mean, talk to people in Canada. It was much worse up there, you know. People didn't come back, and they were really troubled by that. And in some ways, is similar to what happened with newspapers, is it became much more of a business, and then the nuance of baseball. They thought people wanted more action and more home runs, and then the steroid thing came in. And if you're talking about Bud Selig, he served the owners, and he also served the players, and he just let it go, and everyone was in love with the home runs, and it wasn't the same game. So now, with the cheating thing, I'm kind of like, look what happened with the steroids. I mean, they ruined stats for me to an extent, at least in terms of records. I still play Strat-O-Matic baseball and fantasy. The mathematical construct of baseball cannot be ruined for me. I mean, I'm just too much of a geek. But they have problems. And they're losing. They still sell a lot of tickets. But they're losing the young fans, too, I think. We know they've lost a lot of the black community, which is problem they've been dealing with for years. The game is considered too boring, But this thing with the cheating, I think to some, in some ways it's an extension of the over technical nature of the sport. Like you kind of allude to, it's run now by a lot more Ivy League guys, and they analyze everything to death. They have all these new stats that even I don't pay attention to. And sure, they came up with a way to cheat through technology to tell players what pitch was coming. And I can't just say, well, they've always tried to steal signs. This is different. And the players are pissed off. And the sport is going to have a rough year, I think, because of it. And I think some people are going to turn away the way Canadians did after what happened with the strike lockout, whatever happened that year. And I guess all sports would benefit if there wasn't as much money in them. But we're not going to turn the clock back on that, I guess. So as long as there's all this incredible profit in these games, so people are still consuming them to a great extent. And it's kind of like the corruption in government in general right now. Like, is there a significant part of the populace that doesn't care? Because it's not like attendance of baseball is going to collapse.
Right.
And people will slowly forget. They slowly forget steroids, and now it's like the home runs last year were higher than this, right back to the heights of the steroid era. And why? Do people think that no one is taking steroids anymore? That couldn't be possibly be part of the problem?
Or something like steroids, yeah. Right.
Or juiced balls.
Yeah, how much credibility does a commissioner like this have now when it comes to the baseballs? He says that they weren't juiced, right?
It was just a batch. Whatever the batch was, they clearly went farther. Then we find out from the minor leagues that they put them in the AAA and the numbers were even worse. I think they have problems. I think this cheating scandal deflected attention away from the netting that needs to be put up in all these parks because someone's going to be killed by a foul ball. And it's been happening more and more. And they needed to address that. And I think they kind of backburned that, didn't they? Because now they're worrying about the cheating scandal.
Right.
And are they getting it thrown at every day? Like, the attention is away from what's a beautiful game. But it's, again, the parallels. You know, I love the NBA, but it's a much different game. And baseball is so much different. And that's an old guy thing, too. I don't miss the bunting and the double switching and all that like a lot of people. I mean, the game's going to evolve. But baseball's a different game now, too. What was being played last year, there are fewer and fewer balls in play than ever.
Mm.
And I think that's a problem. But am I just seeing it through my traditional eyes? Or I love fielding, the glove, the great play. If there's significant lower percentage of balls hit in play, there's not going to be as much defense. There's not as much of a need for speed anymore. Well, you wonder why minorities who trend faster and love speed don't like baseball. It seems like a lot of standing around. I miss the days of like the Cardinals stealing all those bases and driving pitchers nuts. You can't drive pitchers nuts stealing anymore. How do you drive a pitcher nuts, man? Steal the signs or the idea that the way the ball's going off the bat, the pitcher's going to get killed, too. That scares me.
Right.
What do you do there? I mean, you can't change the bats. They don't use metal bats, but that ball is really coming off that bat hard. I think we're going to see the day where all pitchers have to wear helmets.
Yeah.
And they're going to resist that, of course. But well, now we're going down the road of baseball and all its problems, but
we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. They need to make the game shorter. You got everything you need? We didn't really talk about the news and all that
stuff. No, we did all right. It's all great.
If you need more, just call.
That's good.
Help you out. Politics of what happened at the news, people aren't really interested in that, I don't think, anyway. It's just people left for all their various reasons and moved on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but at the same time, I mean, it's still a significant change for the media landscape, what it means for, again, the consumer, the listener, the reader. And that's why I asked you what's going to be lost when the paper goes away, if in fact it goes away.
Yeah.
I don't think that's insignificant. And when they change the players there, whether by by force or by offering a buyout or whatever. I mean, those are major changes. You know, everybody knew Bob DeCesare and Bucky Gleason and Jerry Sullivan. You know, you go down the list.
And they screwed up. I mean, these changes were going to come, but it was in some ways a self-destructive act on their part to take the columns away from me and Bucky. I mean, I have to make that clear because people say, oh, you retired, they fired you. No, I took the buyout because they took my column away. That was their decision. And because of that, I think Tim Graham left because of that. Bob DeCesare left because of that. I think Vogel was going to leave because of the Athletics. But they mishandled the situation. And I have been told that at the highest levels that they later said that they probably screwed up. But again, it wasn't going to save the future of the Buffalo News to keep all that sports staff together.
Right.
So.
But that's on the record.
Definitely on the record. It bugs me a little bit that there are people who think either I retired, which I didn't, or that I got fired, which I didn't. Bucket, I could have stayed.
But they took your columns away.
Yeah. So if that sounds like sour grapes on my part, I'm just giving it to you straight as I always would.
I'd expect nothing less, Jerry Sullivan.
Yeah.
All right. Jerry Sullivan. Thanks for spending so much time with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm flattered.
All right. Yeah, I got to get over it.
Yeah.